The Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefery.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefery's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefery.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 81. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or join the mailing list at ronmckeefery.com to stay up to date with the latest episode or anything else that I have going on. This week, real excited to have Zach Mathers with us. Zach is the head strength coach, head athletic trainer at the University of Sioux Falls, and we have a connection with Zach, several members of our staff. And so Zach, he came down, spent the day with our staff, and I got to spend about, 48 hours talking shop with him. And just a great guy, doing a fantastic job. If you're not familiar with their program, they were dominant in the NAIA for several years. In fact, my last college game was against Sioux Falls in the national playoffs as a player. So felt that firsthand, and then they've moved up to Division II, and they've done a fantastic job there as well. And so, we get into, with our staff, we sit down and we get into a lot of things. One is the athletic trainer, strength coach dynamics, since he's both, provides a unique perspective from that. We talk about the three principles that he uses to design his strength and conditioning programs, and how he provides coverage with a limited staff and obviously limited time where he's having to divide. And, we talk a little bit about, for the young strength coaches listening, we talk a little bit about the toughest questions that he asks in the interview process that a lot of people get tripped up on. And so I think there's something in here for everybody. I think it's a great episode. Zach's a great guy, and I know you're going to get a ton out of it. Before we get started, I want to make sure we recognize our sponsors, EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com. Ignition is a sports performance company based in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we just got word that Ignition's coming back on board for 2015 as a sponsor, and I couldn't be more thankful for that and more excited to be continued aligned with a phenomenal company, not just for what they do in the marketplace, but how they do it. And I'm real excited. I'm going to have Cliff come on the show and talk about some of the work that he's doing through Ignition in Cincinnati, in the inner city, working with some of the homeless. That's going to be a Christmas episode, and I really can't wait to share that story with you. I've gone out with him, and it really is impactful. Changes your life, and like I said, not only are they doing it with their athletes the right way and training with the latest trends and cutting edge techniques, but they're doing it and they're addressing the spirit part of it as well, and that's what I'm all about. So I'd highly encourage you to check them out. Go to their Facebook page, follow them on Facebook, their Twitter page, whatever, and just stay connected with Ignition. And please reach out to Ignition and Elite Form, and just let them know how much you appreciate them being involved with the show. Also, Strength Coach Basic Training is a product that I created for young strength coaches. In this episode, you see us sitting around the table. We have weekly meetings where I meet with our interns, our coaching assistants, and they all go through Strength Coach Basic Training. And we created this basically so that people could not afford to come down and do an internship could come in, do all the same lectures that we do. So I have the eight lectures that correspond with eight projects and assignments that they do. They post them in the group. And the reason we moved it to a Facebook group was so that there could be more of a community aspect. And so we post jobs, we post articles, we post videos and manuals and all kinds of stuff. So it really is a cool community. If you're interested in that, go to strengthcoachbasictraining.com, sign up, and then we'll add you to the Facebook group, and we'll go from there. So I want to get to the episode. I know you're going to get a ton out of this. Take lots of notes, and we'll see you on the other side.
Head strength coach over at Sioux Falls University in South Dakota. Before that, he was a strength coach and trainer at CNOS Surgery Center in Sioux City, Iowa. That's kind of where I met him. He was my head strength coach at Morningside for 2 years. Then he got me at my first GA spot with that company. Worked under him for a year before he got the job at Sioux Falls and went up there. He's been a really good mentor to me. He's taught me a lot about the field of strength conditioning, as well as just being a good friend and mentor as a person as well. So really close guy, really great guy. And I'm excited for you guys to meet him and sit around and talk with him.
Awesome. Well, Zach, go in a little bit, kind of how you got into the field. You kind of talked a little bit, but what made you go into the field and kind of how you got to you? Kind of what led to you being the head trainer and the head strength coach at Sioux Falls?
I went to probably a pretty non-traditional route for a head strength coach, I think it would be very, very safe to say. I started out as an athletic training major in college at Buena University, a small Division III school in Iowa. After that, I got a job right away at that company that Coach Fink mentioned, CNOS. Stands for Center for Neurosciences, Orthopedics, and Spine. I started out as our head athletic, just an athletic trainer. I covered actually 8 high schools, so I just had a big, long road trip I covered. Throughout that whole time, I was very interested in sports performance and did some stuff. At CNOS, we ran summer camps at that point in time. So we had an 8-week summer camp that we did 4 weeks before the 4th of July, 4 weeks after the 4th of July. We had those. There's probably 250 or so athletes that we ran through every summer. Not a huge number, but what we were doing, that was just kind of how our trainers filled our summer months and stayed busy. I did that for about 3 years, and then we decided that was a pretty good money maker for us. I wanted to grow that, so I took a position as the director of what we called our power and performance programs. In about 3 years, we jumped from about 250 to about 5,000 or 6,000 athletes throughout the Sioux City area, and that at that point in time, I think that's when Coach Fink was coming through. I think actually in your summers, we hired him to help in the summers, just as an intern in the summers, kind of running around, helping out different groups. I think we ended up with, when I left there in 2010, we had 22 high schools, and I think we're somewhere between 6,000 and 10,000 kids that we work with every single year, from grades 5 up through Morningside College and Briarcliff College, where Brian came from. At that point in time, I got a phone call from the University of Sioux Falls. They were making the transition from NAI to Division II. They'd never had a strength conditioning. Coach Grubb was actually their football strength conditioning coach, if you guys know him, so you can imagine how that went.
Strength coach of the year.
Yeah, he was the strength coach of the year for NAI. So. But not a big university. We're a private Christian university, not a ton of money. They didn't have enough money to just hire a strength coach, and that's all they did, so they had to kind of combine positions at that time. They didn't have an athletic trainer either. So since I was certified and marginally qualified in both, I took the job, and I've been there for 5 years now. I'd say right now I oversee both departments, primarily my time spent in the strength conditioning area. I have a great athletic training staff, which takes care of a lot of that stuff, and so I kind of just oversee. I only work with football from an athletic training perspective, and then I take care of our budget, some of our leadership, some of our staff development type things, and then I'll, from a football perspective, my assistant does all the kind of the grunt work, I guess. She does a lot of the treatments and modalities and rehabilitations and communications. I come in when there's a playing time decision, when there's an injury that needs a good evaluation, and I communicate with our doctors as well to do that, and she does the rest, but for everything else, I'm primarily strength conditioning in that route. So it's an interesting way to do things. It's very busy, and you can kind of imagine that. The one thing, I had mentioned this to Coach yesterday, we never have the conflicts between strength conditioning and athletic training. those conflicts never arise for us, and it's something I wish we could split at some point in time, and hopefully in the foreseeable future we'll be able to split those into two separate positions, and I'll just take over as the strength portion of that. But for right now, that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, and I want you guys to ask questions here, but – you know, one question kind of leads into that, that dynamic, that strength coach athletic training dynamic. You know, what's cool is that you have the unique perspective to have to sit in both chairs, you know. And so just looking out at the strength and conditioning profession, what are some positive things that you see happening with that dynamic? And obviously the negative is, like, you know, people aren't getting along, things like that. How, you know, what would be advice from both sides of the chair?
I think from an athletic training perspective, looking at the strength and conditioning field, is just making sure that there's an understanding that there has to be limitations at some point in time. That understanding, if there is an injury, whether it be an ankle injury and they have to get this squat in, is there a different modification? Is there a limitation in place that we can utilize to still get them improved, to still do that lift? And that's just a small example. But understand there's going to be limitations at times. There's going to be injuries that require that, and making sure that you're working with the athletic training staff and vice versa to make sure that happens. From the strength staff, it's very nice. For us, it's nice. Again, there's the constant, there's always communication, because I talk to myself probably all the time, way too much anyway, but the communication is always there that we know what those limitations are. And I think from a strength conditioning aspect, it really helps me. You know, I don't know if we're getting a philosophy at some point in time, but our number one goal is to protect our athletes and reduce the risk of injury. And from that standpoint, you know, I know what causes injuries. I have a really great understanding of the biomechanics and the mechanisms of injuries and what's actually going on in the physical therapy aspect of it, the rehabilitation aspect of it. And so I can kind of almost work backwards and make sure that we're doing everything possible to protect from those injuries happening. So I think it helps me out with our programming quite a bit, that we can look at, and prehab is probably kind of a garbage term for it, but I still use it. But we'll do a lot of prehab for those injuries and make sure if we see something that's going on, we'll get on it before it turns into missed practices, missed games, and those types of things. So from that perspective, it's really nice for me, and I think that's where, from a strength conditioning staff, you can utilize those athletic trainers to say, hey, I got this kid, this is going on. You know, is there anything that you can see that would help me to make sure he's going? And it might not be something you can program for your entire group, but it could be something where he's staying in. You know, we use the FMS. We don't use it as much as we used to, but we still use the FMS, and if something crazy comes up with our FMS, they're going right into our athletic training staff, and they're doing all their rehab and stuff that maybe the rest of my staff isn't quite as well trained to do so, and I might not have the time, so we'll send them in there either before or after their workouts every day to make sure. But I think it's a good tool to use, because I think they are more than just ice and ibuprofen. Not much more sometimes, but they are more than ice and ibuprofen and taping guys up. So I think you can utilize that, their expertise in some of those areas.
We know the big thing, and we talk about this as a staff all the time, but, you know, between that strength coach athletic training dynamic, you know, such an adversarial type of relationship out there, right? You know, and what we have to get our head around is that it's two totally different professions, right? And I can't do, and this is unique because you do both, but like I'm not the caregiver, you know, and it takes a real special person to be that ultimate caregiver, to always be there for injuries and the psychology of getting somebody back from an injury and things like that, you know. And our athletic training staff can't necessarily do the things that we do, you know. And so, you know, I don't pretend to try to do their job, you know, and we shouldn't as a strength and conditioning community. We should, you know, we should identify that that's something that we're not qualified to do, you know. Yeah.
Question, something yeah. that's, you know, really dynamic about the two hats that you wear. You're talking to a table full of strength coaches. So is there anything that you see in common strength coach practice that you, having an AT background, you see and it red flags in your mind? A very common thing that maybe a lot of coaches do in the weight room that you may not like to see? Like any exercises or like combinations or progressions or anything?
Not necessarily. I think everybody, you know, and again, that's part of my unique route, is that I've kind of been doing this for 15 years, doing both. So what I see, you know, when I come visit, the one thing I saw this morning is, I think your rack had a kid with a knee injury maybe.
Yeah.
And had no clue. Ask coach over there, can this get squat? Haven't heard anything, roll, you know. And so just the communication is probably the biggest thing I see that would ever break down. And I'm not trying to throw anybody in the bus. I just noticed it this morning. So but just the communication and just making sure that there's communication going on. And that's probably what I talk to my staff more about than anything, is communication with coaches, communication with training staff, communication with your kids, and making sure that they know that you know everything that's going on, and they know everything that's going on. That breakdown is going to cause more problems than any exercise progressions or exercise selections.
Right. What we're trying to do there, so what, I'm assuming you asked Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Fred's our liaison with our athletic training staff, you know, and so that's kind of how we got it set up. You guys all know this, you know, and that's the advantage we have to have with coaches out there on the floor like we do, is that, you know, we identify something, we address, you know, we ask to confirm, or, you know, where we're at, and then we make the adjustments based off that, you know, and so it's a positive thing there. You got to know philosophy a little bit. What is the philosophy that you guys have there, maybe, you know, from a programming standpoint, you know, with being in a situation where you're one on or two on 105, you know, how do you implement your program?
Yeah. Well, our three major principles we're going to look at is reducing risk of injury, creating power and explosion. We do primarily team sports. We don't work with track and field, so almost everything we do is kind of what I would consider kind of a power and explosive based sport, and then, you know, train for the sport, which kind of more of a recruit talk than it is a strength conditioning talk. But reducing the risk of injury, again, is probably our key thing. We're Division II. We have smaller numbers. From a football perspective, we're a no-huddle offense, and I was just talking to Coach Fink about this. You know, our guys are averaging 105 plays a game if you count special teams. And we don't have TV timeouts, and so we're rolling. So just making sure we got guys in the field able to practice is extremely important for us. Same thing with, you know, basketball, baseball, softball, soccer, volleyball, whatever it is. So keeping our athletes safe and healthy is our priority. Do that, we do several different things, you know, ground-based, multi-joint, three-dimensional, kind of all those buzzwords that you can hear anywhere. But I think what we do that I think separates what we do a little bit that I really hang my hat on is our assessment process. And we use the FMS. That's kind of our basis. I don't probably use it the way it is in the manual, but I do use it. We test every athlete comes in right away, and that's one of the first things we do. Typically what we see is our freshmen is the same deficiencies all the way across. And so I don't change a lot with it because I already know that they're going to have a single leg strength issue. I know they're going to have a weak core. I know they're going to have probably an issue with a torsal stability push-up. I know all those things are going to exist, but I still want to see it, and I still want to see that those numbers are there. And if there's any really low numbers, any big-time red flags, then we're going to get it on those right away. I think that part of our assessment has really helped us with reducing our risk of injuries. We had a really, really good year this year in football, and we've had a good year, again, knock on wood, but we've had a good year in everything else. So just kind of helping us prepare for the rigors of that sport. We've been pretty successful at with it. We also do a lot of, and I'm sure you guys do it too, meeting with the coaches to see what the athlete needs, meeting with the athlete to see what they need, looking at our injury trends, where those injuries are happening, where they're coming up, is it extended practice time, or are we having an extra amount of concussions or ankle sprains, or what are we seeing? And again, being the athletic trainer, I have access to all that data right away. And so we'll look at that and just kind of look at our programming to make sure that we're getting the right stuff in. We also do a lot of single leg strength. I really believe in single leg strength. We're still gonna squat, we're still gonna deadlift, we're still gonna do bilateral stuff, but we're gonna introduce a lot of single leg strength and pretty heavy and pretty high volume. I think that's just getting those small supporting muscles and getting that balance and proprioception. That's big time for those things. We'll actually turn our we use a tier system, or kind of my version of the tier system, our tier two on day one. After our hang clean is always a single leg, is always a heavy single leg exercise. And so we're gonna put it pretty high up on our priority and make sure we're getting some heavy work done with that tier two on day one. Then our last thing is just core strength. And I think you guys do a ton of it too, and I'm sure we're pretty similar on that. The better we can control our center mass, the better we can control the things that are going on. It's gonna help our balance and our proprioception, our body awareness. So doing a ton of core strength and making sure it's not just so guys can lift their shirts up and look really good. I think that's what that's probably more of a recruit talk than it is for you guys, but just making sure that we're hitting. And I know you use more muscle, but we use flexion, extension, rotation, stabilization, and lateral flexion. Those five movements are the ones that we use, and we kind of categorize it that way, and we try to hit at least two movements or two exercises for each movement every week, and we have pretty high volume in them. So those are kind of the basic things we do, and then how we implement those things, I really believe in the tier system and how it's set up and the total body aspect of every single day. We also, again, everybody's got their own version of everything, and what I've found is I want to see, I probably maybe even added a couple things to it rather than taking out, but I want to see some, we do what we call pre-work every day, which is some of your metabolic work and things like that. Mm-hmm. We do pre-work, actually, from talking to Brian, I mixed in our warm-ups with our pre-work, but we even do an additional mobility session before every workout, so we'll roll, then we'll do some quick feet type stuff, some hurdle mobility, some hip mobility, a little bit of core strength. We'll go right into our first warm-up set and then do a mobility exercise or a pre-work exercise. We'll do those. We'll go through our five tiers, which I set up pretty traditionally in that way, and then we'll come down. Every single day, I'm working posterior chain, I'm working shoulder, and probably two shoulder exercises every single day. The reason for that is we had a lot of shoulders, maybe from poor tackling, but either way, we had a lot of shoulders, so I thought we had to do a lot more work on our shoulders to make sure that we're prepared for that, and this year it's paid off. I think we had four last year, and we had two just your basic reached out, got in a bad position, and got yanked back. We've had two of those this year. I think we had four surgeries last year, and only we're going to have one this year. So just trying to work our way back, zero AC sprains, you know, things like that, and making sure. With our pre-work, we also work in kind of the concussion reduction exercises, a lot of neck strength and things like that. And then we always end every day with some type of core exercise, as well as working something in with our pre-work and our mobility work and our pre-warm-up. Some other things, I can't think of anything else. We were just talking about this, and now my mind just went blank on the things we just talked about. But that's kind of how we're going to set it up every week and make sure we get through it. I do, sure. Yeah. So
yeah, Fred, what do you got?
Being at the Division II level, you talked about your budget and working both. How would you kind of try to have to go outside of the box with, you know, equipment or makeshift? What's that?
And getting resources.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you kind of go outside the box with that? Some example.
Creativity. Yeah. We have a really good maintenance guy at our complex that can do some stuff for us. So we make do with whatever we got. And just so you kind of know what our facility is, we have a really big and really nice facility. It's huge. It's 98% of the time it's our weight room. And that's all it is. And the other 2% is Wednesday afternoons from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. They pole vault in there. Other than that, it's ours. And we have 30 yards of turf. We have a half a basketball court. We have a 40-yard track on the side, which is essentially storage space. But and then we have our weight room. But we have six racks, three half racks, three full racks. We have two bars per rack, and then one set of dumbbells. And we have some other miscellaneous stuff that we kind of do. But we don't. And my biggest fight is to get our athletic department and our university to understand that we have to have a budget of some sort, even if it's $100, just so I can replace clips or something like that right here. So pretty much I find what I need, and then I find a way to get it as cheap as I possibly can. You know, PVC pipes are cheap, and we can do a lot of stuff with that. We bought the buffers because I find them on sale at Menards. You know, the Tiger Tails that are $60 a piece, we find a way to make them for $4 a piece. They might not be quite as sturdy, but we can make them for $4 a piece. You know, a lot of the stuff is the recovery. You know, I can't afford foam rollers, so suck it up on PVC pipes. Of course, I don't have to go there. But if we got some bad ones, we do have some. I made some. We found some foam. And again, I have the athletic training budget also, so if we have some extra, you know, I'll steal a lot of TheraBand from athletic training for our shoulder work and for, you know, our band pull bars we'll use just our thickest TheraBand that we have from athletic training, and anything that's ones is always the others, because we're right next to, literally, you walk out of our weight room, you walk five steps, you're in our athletic training room, so we have that all right there. So, and then it's creativity, and it was kind of fun sitting with your meeting yesterday, just looking at looking at things how you guys look at it with some resources versus how I look at it with without the resources, just kind of really plotting out how a football group's going to get through that has 24 guys. But then the one thing we don't have is we have six racks. We have 300 to 350, give or take, athletes that we work with, and we don't work with track and field. So we have two weight rooms. One of them's on campus. It's a pretty small one. So we have two groups every morning at 6 o'clock, one on each in each facility, two groups at 7 o'clock every day, one at each facility. Then almost everybody has class between 8 and noon. And then we have a group of 1 o'clock, 2:30, 3:30, 4:30, 5:30. Every single day, and so there's no time in between. So it's just we have a really big jigsaw puzzle as we're setting up our workouts. You know, okay, football's at 1 o'clock, volleyball's at 2:30, soccer's at 3:30. Where's volleyball going to be at 3:30 if they're not done, so that we can make sure soccer's coming in and they can get their workout started? And what do we do that? So a lot of it is just making sure. It's a lot of prep and a lot of planning. And then again, if we see something we like your dip attachments that I saw, I got a buddy that's really good at welding, and so just see what he can do for us and find a way to make it happen. You know, we had a kid made us a track kid who wanted some projects because his dad had a welding shop. He wanted to make us kind of prowler type sleds, so he went and made us some, and they worked. And it just stuff like that, we just got to constantly find it. And then I've been there 5 years now, and I've met almost everybody. I've met all of our donors, and so I'm able to kind of at least talk to them and say, hey, this is a huge need for us. This is going to help every single athletics program. Our coaches are really bought in, which kind of how I came in as the first strength coach, and kind of what you're going through right now, coaches that are kind of set in their ways. And it took me 3 to 4 years to get them to really buy into what we're doing. But now they're starting to realize it, and coaches are even saying, hey, I got a couple $100. Is there something that'll help our team out? Absolutely. And then I have, again, talking to you the other day, you have your wish list and your amount of money. And so if anybody calls and has money, I'm like, yep, I got it spent already. Let's roll. You know, and so we have a lot of stuff like that we have in place and pushing to get some things and rolling like that. So long-winded answer to your question.
That's good. You guys all know that. I mean, we kind of have our 1 to 3 and 3 to 5 and our 5+ plan that you guys all have been working on. And got within that, you have three categories. You have kind of the clips, the bands, and you know, the things that are going to have to be repaired, replaced, and things like that. That's either annual budget, right, or repair budget. Then you have this kind of sexy wish list of things that you can go out and get booster money for, right? Or sell equipment for, things like that. And then you have the third category is a coach comes downstairs and it's like, I got some money, what can we do to spice this up recruiting wise? Or this is kind of the major wish list or the major, the thing that you're planning for in your athletic and your budget. So breaking it down like that, I know we had that conversation the other day as well. What about, you know, so you talk about 300+ athletes, you know, you're doing athletic training, strength and conditioning, sometimes maintenance, sometimes facilities, sometimes a little bit of everything. How do you provide coverage for that, you know, especially being in, like you have yourself in a GA, right?
Yep.
So being in two separate weight rooms, even.
I hire good people, I think is the best thing that I can really trust, and like our GA for athletic training is kind of my right-hand man. Right-hand woman, I guess it would be for that, but she's outstanding. So I can really trust her to run a lot of that stuff and do those things. And I don't spend a ton of time in the training room, just as needed. So she kind of takes care of a lot of that. My GA for athletic training, I think it's maybe similar to how you guys have it, where you guys have your weight room over there and you run it and you run your programs. And we do everything together. We write everything together. He has his four sports that he really programs for, but then we go through it together. I have my seven sports, something like that, that I program for. And then we go through it just so we're kind of on the same page with whatever, in case, you know, there's going to be a situation where he's doing baseball most of the time, but he might have to go take care of something. I got to step in for baseball. We just need to know what's going on. So with a small staff, we have to have that. We have a couple interns that run around typically, and we'll utilize them to help us out, but it's just, again, it comes down to really careful planning and scheduling and making sure that we're
that we're right on and right where we need to be.
Well, how about we go a little bit even further into that and go, you know, on a, in a training session. So it's you, you've got 24 football players out there.
Yep.
How are you setting up your sight lines? How are you going to, I mean, is it you're putting somebody in charge of the rack, one of the athletes in charge of the rack, or are they taking themselves through?
We run, we kind of run on the whistle. So where you guys will kind of go your independent groups, we'll do everything on a whistle. I'd like to see what my Fitbit would say about how many times I'd stomp back and forth in front of our racks every day, but we go on a whistle. So if we have our hand clean, warm-up set, number one, the whistle blows, and then I'll say you have 2.5 minutes to get hand clean, warm-up set, number one done, plus overhead stick squats and leg swings. And in 2.5 minutes, the whistle's blown again, you better be back on your rack, ready to go for your second set. And so then when we get into our work sets, we're typically between 90 seconds and 2 minutes on our work sets, and essentially what we're saying there is, because we're going to have some weight switching, it's going to be a little heavier and a little more focused, so I'll say work set number one, we have, you know, 100 seconds, and so I'll blow the whistle. They all need to get through by the time the next whistle blows for set number two. So we kind of keep them on that so I can always see what's going on. If we have some interns, and we are hiring a second GA, so if you guys are still looking, I know we talked a little bit, but if there's somebody looking for a GA, we have a spot starting to open up, we'll have a second GA. So what I'd like to do is similar to how you do it, but we'll have each of them will have three racks that they kind of make sure, and we'll only have three people going at a time because we don't have that much space, you know. And then I'll kind of oversee and stomp around and make corrections as we need to and do that. So we keep everything on the whistle, usually through the third tier, and then after that it's kind of go from there. Probably going to utilize how you do it with your four guys and split into two and two. Mm-hmm. I liked how that flows, or I like the. Did a little bit this morning, but it was a little quicker lift, but I like the vision of how that flows, so I think I'm going to try to implement that a little bit. What I have done is, it's kind of similar, is if we have some dumbbell stuff, again, we have 24 guys with one set of dumbbells, we'll never get it done. So what I'll do is I'll take half of them and go, you know, you three racks, go over here and get your dumbbell stuff done, you split here, and then we'll split up among the six. So similar to what you've done, just not quite the same, but I think we're going to try to utilize it a little more like you do it, but just finding a way to make sure that we're getting in and out a little more quickly. And we don't have a lot of standing. We hustle through pretty good. I mean, if you're looking at even on a, you know, your heavy squat, maybe you got 2 minutes, but to get four guys done on your next set, I mean, you got to be zipping along pretty good, and they got to be switching weights. So, you know, one guy's spotting, one guy's lifting, the other two are looking at their sheet and getting ready to switch weights, and kind of like NASCAR pit crew. So I'm not a NASCAR fan, but we wanted to be extremely quick and extremely efficient and get through those things so we can get all our stuff done and done.
What do you guys got?
How do your normal day set up? What time you get in? Do you get in early?
I usually get in between 4:30 and 5. I'm also our facility director to pile on everything. So, so I'll have, you know, I try to keep my email inbox under 10. That's usually my to-do list, and it'll start out at 30 when I get there, get it to under 10. By the time I get back to my computer through the day, it's usually about 90 and cut it down, and a lot of it's garbage. But going through injury reports for all our sports, talking with our staff and things like that. So I'll kind of take care of that right away between 4:30 and 5:30. At 5:30, it's time to get locked in for a workout. We usually have a quick meeting with our staff before the morning just to make sure our day is set up correctly, just a quick, you know, 2 to 3 minute review. For me, I usually just kind of chill out from 5:30 to 5:45. We have a coach's Bible I read every day, look through the workout, that kind of stuff, and I'm out there ready to roll. Then workouts at 6 and 7, 8 o'clock, we kind of chill out for about a half hour, 45 minutes. From an efficiency standpoint and from a little bit of a scientific standpoint, we try to do our meetings while we work out. So we'll work out as a staff around 9:30, somewhere in that range. We'll work out for about an hour, take a quick shower. I usually have I have crazy thoughts sometimes, so I'll just talking through it. But I think better while I'm working out, while I'm active, and not just sitting at my desk. Because if I'm sitting at my desk, my phone's here, my computer's dinging, I got people coming in and out. So I just go work out, and we just kind of talk through all our stuff while we work out, anything new we want to put in, and then shower quick, eat quick, and then we're back ready to go. And typically we have that group starting at 1 o'clock, and so we got a little downtime there before we get rolling. And then workouts all afternoon. You know, if it's practice, if it's football practice, I go out and cover practice. GA and intern stay in and finish up workouts. And then, you know, know, similar to what you guys do in practice. I run around, spot the ball, officiate, warm them up, punishments, whatever we need, whenever we need done. I was an O-line coach for a day. So our O-line coach had a baby, so I took a crash course and had to coach O-line. So add that to my resume. And then finish up our day, and then, you know, it kind of stumped this year because my athletic training GA has finished up her master's, so she had class on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so she had to leave at 5:30. So I ran the training room from 5:30 till whatever is done. Yeah, doing treatments and supervising our students while they did treatments. And then usually home about 7, right around there. I live 2 blocks from the stadium, so it's quick to get there and get back. So that's kind of the typical day in season, and off season will be pretty close to the same, just no practice that I cover.
So you look around, we got some Honey Stingers, Balance Bars, Rocket Reef, a lot of supplements and stuff. You have a pretty limited budget. You had a good idea to get around that. So what do you guys do supplementation wise?
We do. I'm also, we got another resume title, is I'm also our nutritionist, and I set up all of our food, all of our meals. Typically not for everybody. Our assistant volleyball coach is awesome, and she's pretty in tune with that, with the female and her team do that, so I don't have to do much with volleyball, but football, men's and women's basketball set up, or help set up all their meals. Our process is education, education, education with their nutrition. And if you drive from campus to our stadium, you cross like 75 fast food restaurants. And so a lot of education on, you know, what to eat, when to eat, how to stop there. We've actually had to go talk to Hardee's because we had a guy that was addicted to Monster Burgers. So I pretty much went and said, if you see this guy, call me. And kind of, he was a really fat running back for a while, but we got him straight. But just a lot of education. And then we do chocolate milk, and we keep it really simple. We go through probably 40 to 50 gallons of chocolate milk per week with our athletes. We have a machine back there, and
you have the cafeteria.
We got the cafeteria deal. It's ice cold. I think it's the best chocolate milk, at least in South Dakota. I'm not sure if this comes over this far with that title, but we do that every day. And then a lot of it, again, is education. You know, during fall camp, especially for our football guys, they eat every meal of us, and we have snacks in between. Our head coach has bought into it completely, so I get a health kickback from him, and he actually gives me more of the budget to make sure we're eating good. So basically what we try to do is we really try to teach them how good they feel when they eat right, and show them the things, and so really carefully selected every single meal to make sure they're getting everything they need in. Then we have healthy snacks in between, stuff we give them, plus chocolate milk, and really educate them on the front end, so in the back end we don't have to worry about it as much. We'll do we do a weekly newsletter, nutrition only newsletter, where we go through and we have a simple dorm room recipe, a simple nutrition tip, and then something else quick and easy on there. And then with that, Hy-Vee is our big local grocery store. I don't know if you had those out here, but Midwest Kroger's, okay, so Hy-Vee is our Kroger, so we'll go through the Hy-Vee ads, and we'll pick out all the things that are on sale that week, and then the website kicks it automatically into a Word file, and then we just attach that Word file to the email, so they have all the sales and all the things that would be healthy and great for them to eat, and we kick that out to them every week. I have probably, you know, 3 to 4 meetings a week with athletes individually about their weight and about what they can do and how to do it. It might not be like a 20-minute meeting, it might be a 5-minute conversation, but just kind of talking to them. Again, it's a lot of education, but as far as right after a workout, we're all chocolate milk. We try to keep them away from the pre-workouts a little bit, just with some of the risks maybe involved with that, from a compliance standpoint, an NCAA standpoint. But other than that, we do really all chocolate milk. And we don't have a lot of guys that do much more than that. We have a couple that are taking some protein, but otherwise I think we're probably about all chocolate milk and really not much else that our guys or girls will take. So,
yeah. I like that. So at the D2 level, it's not like required for any athletes to stay during the summer and work out. So how do you utilize that more time off? Or you just gave us a rundown of what your day was typically like in season and during the school year. tell us like what your typical day is over the summer, or how do you utilize your time off? Do you go out, network, get around, and or just like relax, enjoy, you know, your life a little bit?
We're in a pretty good situation. Sioux Falls is a town, I mean, it's nothing compared to this area, but we have about 150,000, probably a little more than that if you count some of the surrounding communities. So there are some job opportunities available. Our football guys, actually, we have probably about 70 football guys that stay in the summer, which for our level is phenomenal. I mean, we talk to other people in our conference, and they're at 20, and we're at between 60 and 70, maybe even a couple more. So those we still have workouts for every single day, and they changed the D2 rules. Last year, you can't make them stay, but you can actually coach them. It used to be monitor, so you essentially kind of stand there with your hands in their pockets and make sure they're not doing dumb stuff, and just can't really coach them, but you can monitor them. But now you can coach football, and I think this year they're changing the rest of sports so we can actually coach them, which I think will get a few more to stay. But we have usually around 120 athletes that stick around in the summer, and we work around their jobs completely. We understand that they're not on scholarship. We can't pay them to be there in the summer and take classes. So they have jobs. So we usually actually start at 5:30 or 5:45 in the summer. And roll through groups until about 10 o'clock, and then we're off until 4. So I golf. That's what I do. So I leave the workout, and I go straight to the golf course, come back and get a quick workout, and then our groups start at 4 o'clock, and then we'll have lifting groups, kind of an open lifting group from 4 to 6 at night. So we go I get there still about 4:30 in the summers, and then we start up about 5:30, go until 9 or 10, depending on the day, and then off. And then Fridays at 10 o'clock, we're closed for the weekend. So we'll try to get the afternoon group gets moved Monday through Thursday, and then we just do morning workouts on Friday. That way they can get out for the weekend if they need to, and then we can also take some time with their families and get out a little bit too. So we also take, I think, 4th of July week, we always take completely off. We usually lose 30 of them anyway. So we just take it off and then program around it. For those that aren't there, you know, we have a website that's kind of a work in progress, but it's got all their stuff on it. Not any different than most schools do. A website with all the workouts on it. We have video clips of pretty much everything we do. My old GA we just go make it and go do exercises for about 5 hours and get videotaped. So he was tired for a couple of days, but that's kind of how we did that. And those are all online. They have access to those year-round. A lot of times what they'll do is, because we have just kind of a good diverse group of kids staying, they might come back for a week and then go back home and do that a couple times. So we'll continue to work pretty hard during the summer, but that's usually a little more laid back for us. But the workouts, we go hard, but not as long.
What's the best piece of coaching advice you've ever received?
I guess received or found or saw is that you got to get your athletes to buy into your program, and you got to develop those relationships with it. I mean, it matters. It matters that you write a good quality program. It absolutely does. But if your athletes aren't buying into it, then it doesn't matter. So really developing those relationships with your athletes, getting them to buy in, getting them sold on what you're doing. I'd be honest, we spend as much time talking X's and O's with our athletes, with our staff, as we do talking about leadership development and communication strategies. And I read, somehow find a well, bus trips help, but you know, I had a 12-hour road trip where I listened to a book about Navy SEAL training, you know, and stuff like that. So we'll talk about the communication process, leadership development, and just how to help get kids to buy in. And that's probably more than anything, I think that's key. I mean, you can write the best program in the world, but if they don't buy into it, it makes no difference. So just really working your butt off. And I think when you're talking to him about his new job, just putting your time and effort into the kids and into the athletes is going to pay huge dividends in what you're doing.
I would agree with you 100% on athlete buying. It's essential, and to be honest, it's the hardest and most important part of my job. But I want to ask, we're all going to be entering new programs now, eventually here in the future, and I want to know what would you recommend to promote athlete buy-in from a new guy coming into with people being apprehensive about you?
Communication. Mm-hmm. I just talk to them. I think I'm just like when I came into Healing was my big school in Sioux City, and they're perennial champions and everything, so they didn't think they needed to change anything. But, you know, people, you can see people are catching up to them. And just talking to them about, you know, here's what we can do. Here's how I can build around what you're doing. Here's the things I can do for you. How does this fit into your program? And the bottom line is, you know, whether it's right or wrong, it's their program. You know, they're the name in the paper. It's their butt on the line in a lot of situations. So making sure that the head coaches know that you're there to support them, to support their athletes, getting them on the same page with you. So they're hearing it not only from you, but they're hearing it from the head coach, the assistant coach, getting that information out there, talking to the kids that come in that, hey, I see this is what's happening for you. If we can do this, we can, you know, we can give you 2 more inches on your vertical jump. If we can get you in here doing this, even if it's only twice a week for 20 minutes, we can do these things for you, and this is how it's going to help you on the floor. I mean, I'm a huge communication guy, and that's probably one of my weaknesses. Especially early on in my career, is because I was bullheaded and I, you know, came in swinging a couple times and struck out pretty hard. So I mean, I learned my lesson hard that it has to be, you have to get everyone. I mean, first off, just get everybody on the same page and accept input from your coaching staffs. Accept input, because if they're just saying practice over, you know, go get your lift in and get out, you know, or the difference of that and saying, hey, practice over, hey, let's go have a great lift. We gotta get better. We gotta get. Make sure we're keeping our strength up this season. Get in there and knock it out. You know, the difference between those things from their head coach is determining their playing time is huge. So getting that head coach on the same page at the end, and then a ton of time. I mean, it's exhausting. Like when you first start out, I mean, it's still exhausting 5 years later. When I first got to Sioux Falls, get them to buy into making sure that they're on time every day. They got to be here and they got to do this, and this is how we're going to do things, and changing that over. I mean, I get home at night. I had to start buying ASICS shoes that cost 3 times more than the Under Armour discount I was getting, because I was on my feet so much and running around that I was just exhausted. I could barely walk the other day. So I had to, because of just constantly pouring into your athletes and talking to them about every single thing they're doing, why it's going to benefit them, how it's going to help them on the field, and those types of things. So I don't think there's any one real trick, but again, communication was one of my weaknesses. I noticed that when I changed that, when I started working more at that, things started coming a lot easier. And so I hate to beat a dead horse at that, but I think that's probably the key. And accepting input from your coaches and getting them on your same page is kind of key.
That's, you know, we talk about that all the time, but it's, you know, it's communication in that you're talking about their goals and pointing that out, but then it's education as well. It's saying why we're doing, you know, what we're doing. You know, and that's why, yeah, that's why you guys are all here, is because it's, you got the grassroots opportunity to make an impact right away. It's like, hey, this hurts, or why is this, or why is that? And you're able to explain it right then and there and how it's applicable to their sport. You know, and then beyond communication, it's they gotta see success, you know, and so you gotta show them opportunities of where they're getting bigger, they're getting stronger, they're getting more powerful, relate things. And then the last thing is that they gotta have fun, right? And so athletes have fun. Well, how? What are some fun things for athletes?
Performing.
Yeah, competition, right? You know, so that, I mean, that's like, what did we do this morning with the young guys? Play volleyball at the end of it, right? And they were freaking having a blast, you know, because it's competition. Like Shaq Van, doesn't matter if it's checkers or freaking, you know, fourth and one, he's having fun because it's competition. You know what I mean? And so they do that if you show them, you know, they're perceptive, you know, and they know whether or not you give a crap about them or not. And so the good thing that you guys see, I mean, you know, every 2:30 every day, we got freaking 25 freshmen all piled into Fred and Brian's office, you know, because they enjoy being around, you know, around the room. And that's what we got to continue to push, you know, and that's why we're always talking about being positive. If they come in here every time, you don't really talk to them, you don't show them any successes, all you do is when you do talk to them, you freaking scream at them, you know, it's not a very motivating environment. They don't want to be around, you know, so it's something that we constantly we constantly work on as well. Yeah, we want to kind of end this thing because we got to get to the practice, but you talked about reading. You know, give us a favorite quote and then a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book?
Well, give us one for strength and conditioning, one for outside strength and conditioning.
Okay. Book outside of strength and conditioning is Training Camp by John Gordon. Inside strength conditioning. Let's see. I really like the Coach of Strength Training Playbook by Joe Kim. That's one I reference a lot off the top of my head. Quote wise, I'm usually a huge quote guy. Now I'm going blank on it, of course. But I firmly believe any man's finest hour is that when he's worked his heart out in a good cause and lies exhausted in the field of battle. Just, Vince Lombardi is always tough to beat. There's some John Wooden ones that I use quite a bit that I like. I'm kind of a huge quote guy, but of course my mind goes blank and it goes on the spot.
That's a good one right there.
Website, I bounce around a lot. I like to read a lot. I read yours quite a bit. Elite FTS always has some good, interesting kind of practical stuff on there. What's Mike Boyle's called now? Strengthcoach.com?
Yeah.
Is that Mike Boyle's? That one I'll look at quite a bit. And then Big House Power is another one I'll look at. I'll reference those a lot when I get time to. What was the last thing?
App. It's the one that you use. Either with your athletes or just for productivity.
The weather app is about the only one I use. See if I can go golf.
South Dakota.
No, but I'm not on my phone a heck of a lot. So, I mean, the Outlook app is probably, and the calendar app is probably my biggest thing because all of a sudden I'll beep and I got a meeting in 5 minutes. And
sure.
So probably that's about it. I'm not on my phone much. I have a Twitter. Our strength staff has a Twitter account, but I'm not even really sure how to put a lot of stuff on it. The weather one, I have to get in with football. I have to help make sure we're rolling with that stuff. So look at the weather and then the calendar.
I always have a question that I like to ask every strength coach that I meet. We're all in the process of searching for jobs and GAs and all that. What's the toughest question you're going to ask a guy that you're interviewing, either for an assistant or a GA or an intern or anything?
The one I see that they struggle the most with is people go out and they apply for every job they see, then they get a call back and they have done zero research on who the person is or where they applied at. So when you ask them kind of, what do you know about our school? And then all of a sudden you surprise them with what our master's programs are in, where we're located and the things. I don't know if that answers your question exactly, but that's the one I see they struggle the most with. The other one I think they struggle the most with is, what are your weaknesses and how do you go about fixing those? And then what can you bring to the table is one I'm always gonna ask. Like, what's the top thing you're going to bring to the table? And then probably my biggest pet peeve is when you call somebody about a job and they don't call you back. And you apply for the job with me, and I'm, out of my 75 to 100 applications I have for this job, I selected you as one of the top 10 or so people that we're going to at least talk to first, and then I call them, and I have to call them three times, which I'm stubborn, so I'm going to get pissed and just keep calling until they answer, or I'm going to hire somebody first. So just kind of those things, I guess, would be the biggest thing. Know where you're applying. Know everything you can about it. Know everything you can about the person. Find out who you know that they know and get your rolling on that. And then just answer your phone and realize what your strengths and weaknesses are and what you can bring to the table.
Thanks.
So I don't know if that answers that, but that's kind of the things I see the most today. That I find guys struggle with, they're real struggle with too.
No, that's awesome. It's a good question. It's a good question. Well, guys, the coach is going to be around for a little bit longer. He's going to go with us to the game and whatnot. So, I encourage you to walk by, shake his hand, thank him for spending some time with us, and
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, EliteForm.com and IgnitionAPG.com, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out RonMcKeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @RMcKeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @Ron.McKeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.